Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We're here with Kent Funuk, and we're going to jump right into Salesforce. So, Kent, you and I were having a conversation last week, and we sort of got a little bit nerdy about all things sales, and you introduced me to the Modern Sales Guys, which is a phenomenal resource. So thank you for that. Want to get super deep on the topic of Salesforce. But before we do, I'd love to maybe just, can you provide a little context as to, why this is so important to you? And maybe some of the, if we could add in some of the things that you learned at Aptus would be a really, really great to add context there.
Yeah. So, I mean, we, I scaled a team the last 3 years over at Aptus from about four of us to 100. And kind of the first step, and I got this from just going out there and doing my own research on how to scale a team, which there aren't too many resources. But one of the things that I read that made sense to me was making sure that when people are logging activity, when people are changing the statuses of their leads and tiering out their accounts, make sure that everybody's speaking the same language so that you can effectively track the information. You can make sure that, you understand what results are successful and which ones aren't. And, with your processes in Salesforce, that's really the best way to track all that stuff. And so, when I got to Aptus and similar to where I am now at Talkdesk, there's a lot of freeform fields. There's a lot of unnecessary fields that people are repurposing for their own benefit. And, it's kind of the Wild West of Salesforce, if you will. So getting everybody on the same page was, super important just to be able to understand what's happening and kind of to start diving in and fixing things.
Awesome. So before we, one last thing before we really jump in here, can you paint us a picture of, this, sort of magic wand future that, and I know Talkdesk is probably still a work in progress because you just got there. But when you're at Aptus, what is this? If we commit to, learning everything that you're going to teach us today and working on implementing it, what is this magic future that you're going to, enable us to achieve?
Well, I think there's a few things. For one, you'll be able to better identify where the holes are in your own organization. So, on the SDR team, understanding the different metrics will allow you to create a predictive model. So then you can effectively communicate up to the executives what resources you need to get them the results that they need. So, obviously call metrics are important, but then understanding, how many of those calls are actually connects, of those connections, how many are turning into qualification calls, how many qualification calls are turning into discovery calls, how many of those discovery calls are converting into ops, that's our pay. That's our pay metrics. So, obviously, the team cares about that most. But, understanding those different percentages, you can kind of jump in and really work on the different holes that you find. So, whether it's coaching or whether it's providing the team with more resources, it allows you to kind of diagnose and then go in and fix. And then a secondary benefit is that when you're trying to then make sure that you're working hand in hand with, let's say, the marketing team, everybody's speaking the same language as well in Salesforce. So you understand how successful their campaigns are, how successful their events are. And based on those numbers, you can decide where to spend money for next year or, whether or not to do an event next year, whether or not different campaigns and messaging is effective. And so it really creates that cross-functional efficiency. And that's really where I saw the benefits kind of start to go up exponentially, when we're working with other teams and everybody being on the same page.
Gotcha. No longer the wild, wild west of the open fields. Now it seems like you're actually, you're learning from every interaction here.
Yeah, no, definitely. There's some reps that are making a ton of calls and getting a ton of connections, but not getting a ton of meetings. And so, that's clear that, you know, maybe we need to dive into some of those calls and do some play-by-play call coaching. And then there's others that are having, you know, making a ton of calls, but not getting connects, and maybe they're not talking to the right people, right? Or maybe they're not calling the right people, or maybe they don't have the right phone numbers. And so maybe it's worth investing in some data. So those are just some examples of the things that we can do.
I know the inner sales guy in me is the inner junior sales guy in me is like, oh man, it's process. It's time. It's, you know, it's more burden for me to add into Salesforce. But it feels like you're really painting the picture of, you know, there's a ton of value here. And it's not just selfishly for you and the management team. It's actually to get your team the resources that they need to be successful.
No, for sure. I mean, it's, you know, my job is to enable them to make as much money as possible and, you know, for their personal benefit and to advance them in their careers, and anything I can do to help coach them to get there. You know, I want to be able to do it. It's not so that we can be the bad guy watching over and coming by at noon, telling them they've only made 22 calls and only had 3 connects. And that's just, it's not the right attitude to have, in my opinion.
You're not doing any Alec Baldwin impressions anytime soon.
Well, I do horrible Alec Baldwin impressions for every meeting, but yeah, I don't think they appreciate that either.
Fair. Cool. So we're going to be, I know this is a podcast, so we're going to be talking about some screenshots, but I'm going to gray out some of the important stuff, and I'll share them in the show notes for anybody that's listening and wants to take a peek. So you can just click on the episode and jump in there. But let's dive in. So we've got a bunch of notes on the you know, different objects, the different fields, the forms. Where do you, like, logically, where does your brain go first when you think Salesforce fresh install? What do you set up first?
Yeah, I mean, it's a toss-up between kind of setting up the account layout so that people know what they're looking at and they can efficiently go through their accounts. But I think probably understanding how to log the different activities is going to edge out anything else, just because, you know, you have a team of 6 people and they're making 40, 50 calls a day and sending out 40, 50 emails. That's a lot of information coming in at a time, and you want to really make sure that it's coming in to the right buckets. So, you know, really diving in and making sure that all the activity classifications are uniform, making sure that they're not free form, so people can't just type in, you know, what the call was about, because you're never going to be able to track exactly whether that was a connection, whether that was a connection with a decision maker, whether that connection led to a meeting that was booked. And so, you know, really going through and making those things clear and controlled so that the rep can easily select them is super important.
Perfect. So what types of, like, specifically, you map out every single potential interaction the rep's going to have, and you have a given activity type on the, like, is it on the event record in Salesforce?
Yeah. So, like, you know, we, at Talkdesk, it's nice because our solution we use it internally. And it will automatically log the activity. And so we have a dropdown of what they can classify things. We also have a thing for notes, because obviously we want the call notes, but just in terms of classification, we have things like connection, decision maker, connection, meeting booked, connection, non-decision maker, connection, opportunity created, no connection, left a voicemail, no connection, didn't leave a voicemail, wrong number. So that pretty much covers everything that you're going to want to, you know, to capture. If it falls outside of those boxes, you know, it's probably not information that's too relevant to, you know, what you're trying to track. And so I really just don't see an extra bucket that's necessary from there. Although people could probably argue with me on that for sure, but we really don't have any issues beyond things like that. And if there's something specific type of call that you want to track, go ahead and add the classification. But I would just, you know, be wary that list can start to grow and then it gets convoluted and then reps don't really understand what to choose. So keeping it simpler is usually better.
Fair. It's funny. I've personally been on the other end of, you know, trying to pick the activity drop down, and there's like 37 different pieces. And you're like, wow.
Right.
What? Spend more time trying to decide, and you run to your guy next to you and you're like, hey man, how would you classify this? So I like the focus on simplicity.
The auto pick, it's also strategic, you know, putting it in order that, you know, the most used classification, so then they don't have to choose every time they leave a voicemail or something like that. So, you know, things like that can make the rep's life pretty easy.
That's awesome. So once you've got so the first step in your fresh Salesforce install is the activities and all those different statuses, so all the different things they can do. Now what?
So I think, again, in the interest of, you know, the most information that's going to be coming in is probably making sure they understand how to manage leads and contacts coming through, or that they're working. Also campaign statuses you can put in that. So, you know, understanding that, you know, when a lead comes in, it's open. When, you know, as soon as you make that first call, you need to switch it to working. And, you know, under working, there's probably a few choices. You know, ours, we use attempting to contact, contact made, and contact made DM. You know, there's probably others you can add, but, you know, again, simple is better, I think. You know, from there, we also have a nurture. So if our team hits that person 7-8 times and they're not answering or giving us any kind of response, then we flip it over to nurture, and then marketing can kind of drip campaign, invite them to webinars, things like that. But they won't put them in those campaigns unless we flip it over appropriately to nurture. So again, you know, the importance of the status comes into play. And then certainly when it's bad data or no interest or competitor, or they're no longer at the company, you archive it, move along. And then, you know, obviously the best example is qualified. You flip it to qualified, and then, you know, that kind of alerts people to do more research if it comes across their desk from clicking on something else at a later time, or, you know, glitch in the system, whatever it is. You know, that status kind of alerts people to say, hey, okay, what is this? Someone else is probably on this. So those are some examples of our different lead, contact, and campaign statuses.
Gotcha. And so for inbound, those are going to exist on the lead record, right?
Yeah, inbound on the lead record. And, you know, we also have contacts that we're still chasing or trying to qualify that are clicking on things as well. And so occasionally that will get passed to back to the SDR to, you know, continue to nurture and kind of get across the finish line, so to speak, for the SDR role.
Gotcha. And when you're doing outbound, can I assume you're using the contact and campaign status, or what are you using there?
Yeah, so with outbound, you're building the contacts and using a similar working status. And, you know, again, once they're in the system, you know, we're adding contacts rather, and then you don't always get a hold of them, as we all know. And so it's the same story. And because the leads and the contact statuses are aligned, you know, they're able to easily switch it over to nurture. Marketing takes control and drips that contact until they, you know, are ready to listen.
That's awesome. That's a really important piece that I haven't seen too many other places do that. So your lead status and your contact, status are exactly the same drop down.
Yeah, I mean they line up exactly. So far, we haven't had a situation where we've needed anything more or less, or a reason to cut one piece out from the next. Like, you know, if somebody has a better way, please contact me. But we haven't run into any problems. So
awesome. And so at a high level, because everybody can't see the document that I'm looking at here, your statuses are open, then nurture, and you've got all these sort of sub-classifications under nurture, then working, archived, and qualified. Right? Are each of those, Is it sort of the five high-level statuses, and then you have another drop-down, or is it, do you just have like the 15 that are there, and those are all just different statuses?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So there's five main, and then there's a sub-status, and that just allows you to be a little bit more specific. And the reason we added those is because we had the original five, and people were kind of asking, you know, well, what is this? What is that? And the sub-status is kind of help them define and figure it out. Certainly new reps makes it a lot easier for them to go, oh, okay, this is what archive means. It means inaccurate data, no interest, do not contact, not a fit, or no longer the company, you know, so they can kind of just self-explanatory as they're going through and working their leads contacts.
Cool. And you know, when you say sub-status, is this you've got one high level status, like it's a drop down field, and then you've got another drop down, or is it sort of nested in that same drop down?
No, yeah, it's two separate, and so you'll have the status, and the sub-status is grayed out once you select something. For example, there's only one open, the sub-status won't be able to be selected. But if you choose nurture, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that will now, you know, appear as selectable. You'll select your sub-status and then save it. You're on your way. And again, this is, you know, the lead status and the contact status. So, you know, different than obviously the activity log, which we don't want them to have to select a bunch of different things when they're logging activity. So a little bit more of a thoughtful selection.
Of course, yeah. And how does campaign status fit in here? I can see, you know, leads coming in inbound and they get created automatically. Great. Contacts you're sort of uploading and they start, you know, open, I'm assuming. What is campaign status to you? And where does that live?
Yeah, so campaign status, we use Marketo and build campaigns that go out. We use it for events. So, you know, for example, you know, obviously Dreamforce is a huge show. And so we get a bunch of different scans throughout the 4 days, and those scans get put into a campaign, and the campaign status allows us to understand which leads have been touched in response to the campaign and which haven't. And so we actually have a trigger that will update the campaign. So, you know, once you flip it from open to working, it's not like you then have to go into the campaign and then flip it to working. It will flip it to those different statuses, but then that way marketing can track their results and understand which leads are being worked on, whether they need to yell at me because my team's not following up on the scans. And then finally, you know, of the leads, which ones have converted into contacts and opportunities, and then they can decide and, you know, help build their ROI for the event.
Oh, that's really cool. So that's the piece that sort of ties it all together from inbound, outbound, and the, you know, your marketing automation system.
Yeah. And I mean, it can apply. I mean, obviously Dreamforce is, you know, the mecca of events for Salesforce partners, but it can even apply to just small campaigns, you know, different field events, baseball games, certain call campaigns or webinars, things like that. It'll allow you to get an ROI and, you know, ultimately ask for more marketing dollars if things are working, and allow you to save on events that just don't convert.
And I remember when I started, I actually started in sales when I was in like high school. And then I did a bunch of marketing courses in college, and I was just, I was reading all the case studies and like, oh, you're going to spend all this money and not be able to have this ROI, because obviously I was in college. This is kind of a while ago now. And that sort of not being able to get that good data really drove me nuts. I'm like, well, how, as a marketer, how am I going to get paid? Because I'm used to, like, as a salesperson, I know my numbers. I get paid based on my numbers. And that was one thing that really I couldn't figure out. And obviously, as a college kid, I'm sure there were ways of measuring it. But this is like, man, if you would have saved me so much time and frustration if you showed me this at 15 years ago. Where were you, man?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, there is a little bit of resistance when you go from, what do we say, the Wild Wild West to process. But, so it is a tough decision, you know, especially here at Talkdesk. You know, I'm trying to get to where the team was at Aptus in terms of process and, and it's a different process, but it aligns with specifically to Talkdesk. And there's always kind of, if I do this, it's going to cause the reps headache. They're going to be focused on the changes and, you know, looking at the playbook to figure out if they're doing things right. And it's going to cost us some efficiency. We've got some lofty goals. But, you know, I think if you just rip off the Band-Aid and put things in place and, you know, they make sense, then it's really, in the long run, it's a no-brainer.
What's the biggest sort of objection you get to the process here?
You know, a lot of it is reps want to use the subject line for all sorts of different notes, and they don't necessarily want to choose the drop down. And, you know, the easiest fix for that is just put a metric on it. You know, certainly if you pay someone based on how many meetings they schedule, they're going to go ahead and choose that selection when it happens. And so that's always the easiest way to do it. But, you know, if you go through and kind of explain to them what you're trying to accomplish and that it's really a benefit to them in tracking their own statistics, it ends up being a no-brainer to them.
So for all the SDRs that are listening right now and that are rolling their eyes, they're like, come on, Ken, really? What's the benefit?
I know. They're like, yeah, I'm sorry. The benefit to them is they understand what they're doing and what results are coming from it and what they need to do to be better. Simple trick from John Barrows is, you know, understanding how many calls you need to make to get X amount of connections and how many of those connections convert to meetings and how many of those meetings convert to opportunities. And, you know, if it takes you 50 calls to get one connection and you need two connections to hit quota, you know that you need to make 100 calls to hit quota. And so, and if you don't want to make 100 calls, then maybe we should work on other things like making better and smarter phone calls. Once you have the call, asking different questions than what you usually ask that doesn't lead to a meeting. And so, you know, for an SDR who's trying to make it in the sales side of things, then it's what they need to do to get to that next level. And if they're not motivated to do that, then they're probably going to wash out. I mean, this is a thankless job. And if you don't want to be in sales, bless your heart for being in this industry.
Totally. I remember the power that, like, the first time I actually really as a rep, the first time I really understood these metrics, because I sort of grew up in the Wild Wild West a little bit. It was like suddenly there's daylight and I can see, and now I show up to work and I know, you know, exactly how many calls I need to do, you know, give or take, because, you know, it's a numbers game, but understanding the numbers, yeah. It's like, it being able to just, I don't know, it's, you can suddenly see all the math and how it works. You know, you can see behind the curtain. It's not this dark art that, you know, you have to pray and sacrifice and all that. It's you just know the numbers. And once you've figured out the formula, you just need to know what your daily inputs are and trust that the math will eventually work out in your favor.
Yeah. I mean, I do the spreadsheet that, again, this is from Barrows, but, you know, you punch in, you put in your numbers, you calculate it, reference the fields, and you put in what pipeline you can generate per day, per week, per month with X amount of phone calls, and change the variable and be like, oh man, if I make 10 more calls per day, I'm going to be at 120% of my number at the end of the year. And, you know, if you're not looking at it like that, it's pretty tough to kind of really understand the value of, you know, just 10 more phone calls. But it's real money, especially, and performance. And especially when you're trying to get to that next level, it's super important.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. The difference, It's such a powerful sort of idea there is that spreadsheet that you mentioned and just knowing, you know, I want to hit quota, what do I need to do better? And just having that exact formula, it's 10 calls a day. Simple. I'm not saying that's the secret formula, but knowing and understanding that is so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, you start making those 10 calls and all of a sudden the numbers aren't there. You know, you can say, okay, well, what else am I missing here? You know, and again, start to diagnose some of the holes. And that kind of goes back to how we started this conversation.
Yeah, exactly. Even the best sort of players, they're always, you know, reviewing the game tapes, right? We don't always have the luxury of that. You're not going to get a coach sitting on every call of yours. You're not going to be able to get somebody to review every single email chain. But at least if you have these metrics at a high level, you can get somebody knowledgeable on your team to sort of steer you in the right direction to help you unlock that next level of performance.
Absolutely.
Cool, man. We have account tiers up here. So I'm assuming, where does this sit in the process for you? When does one of your reps create an account?
Yeah, I mean, in the enterprise space, the higher levels, generally we bought that data. Obviously the teams in the lower markets are building out territories and different companies are emerging constantly with all the different funding, especially locally here in San Francisco. But, you know, I think mostly with the account tiering and the account layout, I just want to make it as easy as possible for the reps to get a snapshot of what they're looking at when they are going through their day. And, you know, I think it's just as important to standardize these views and make sure that it makes sense. But also, you know, from a tiering perspective, being able to build lists and manage off of those lists so that you understand exactly what accounts you should be going after with, you know, the different percentage of time as you're going throughout the day.
Awesome. So what are you've got four account tiers here. Do you want to walk us through them?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, you know, and again, this is specific to what we're trying to do here is we've kind of got tier one, which we've classified as the whale. We've got tier two, which is kind of table stakes. That's what's going to get you fed as an AE. And so as an SDR, that's where we want to find the bulk of our deals. And then we've got the wide net, which is tier three, and then kind of the rest. You know, right now at Talkdesk, my team, the enterprise team, is focused specifically on building out the territory and getting as much exposure as possible so that we don't miss out on projects simply because they haven't heard of Talkdesk, because we haven't been up in the enterprise space for more than the last 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then we've also got, you know, tier one, which are the whales, which are accounts that, you know, huge enterprise accounts, Citibank, Walmart. These are deals that, you know, we would certainly like to get, but, you know, those are 2 years out and we need to hit our goals now. So that kind of brings us to the table stakes. These are our target approaches. These are like top 25 accounts for our AEs. And this is where the, you know, true 7-10 cadence comes into play and really doing intelligent account-based marketing and account-based outreach, very tailored messaging and, you know, a lot of stalking on social media and commenting on people's posts and things like that. And then, you know, down to tier three, we have the wide net, which is kind of, I call it the build phase, which is these are all the accounts that probably haven't heard of Talkdesk. And, you know, we need to be blanketing them with more of a nurture campaign so that when they have a project, they can, you know, say, oh, well, you know, Talkdesk is a telephony solution. They work with Salesforce. Maybe we should add them to our, you know, RFP. So, and then the rest, those are accounts that, you know, kind of fall out of our realm of what we want to go after at this point in time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So the rest are sort of that ignore status,
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's good accounts in there. I guess like a good example would be government. You know, if they outreach to us and they say they have a project with a budget, yes, absolutely, we want to talk to them and we're going to give them our full attention. But, you know, going in and trying to create projects in those accounts, it's probably not the right focus for us at this point in time.
Fair enough. I know we should keep track going on the Salesforce track, but I'm super curious. You mentioned you're building out this right now with your team. What does that involve? Is that, you know, you've got all of the data and you say, you know, put it in a big spreadsheet and say, you know, these ones are tier one, tier two, or what's your process there?
Yeah, no, we're partnered very closely with our AE team. So, you know, I think that's just as important as anything else we've talked about today. And so it's a one-to-one relationship right now, which is really nice for the size company we were at. I remember when we were this size at Aptis, I think I had 5 reps out of the BDR. And so it's one-to-one and, you know, we rely on the account planning and the targeting to come from the AE that manages that territory. Okay. And then, you know, I mean, I have a meeting with, you know, our VP of sales, myself, the SDR, and the rep, especially in these first couple months here, where we all sit down and go through and add, subtract accounts. It's a dynamic list along with our ICP, and we're constantly making changes to it. So it's an ever-living account. And, you know, as something in the tier three, someone clicks on something or, you know, we kind of sniff out a project, we move it up to tier two. And as we hear from tier two that they just bought someone else and, you know, they're on a 2-year contract, we move it down to tier three or tier four and kind of continue on.
Awesome. Very cool. Last piece we wanted to sort of chat about was the lead source. So where does this, I mean, I know this is super critical for, you know, for marketing. Where does the lead source, this dropdown live in your Salesforce? Is it just on the lead record there?
Yeah, no. So there's, you mean the tier dropdown?
The lead source dropdown.
Oh, the lead source. Yeah. So the lead source dropdown. That's going to live. It'll actually transfer through. So as you convert, that lead source will be a snapshot so that we understand where the lead came from. Kind of a first touch, middle touch, last touch situation. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe we first talked to this person at Dreamforce, you know, a year ago, and then, so we can kind of keep that stamp. We understand, you know, where it originated, and then maybe there's some middle touches with the SDR. Maybe the last touch, which actually brought in the opportunity, was inviting him to a field event. So we have a couple different ways of tracking it, and that kind of allows us to, you know, keep buckets for where our marketing dollars and where our SDR dollars are being spent to bring in the different leads.
Looking through just our notes here, I know we've hit the sort of, we're actually a few minutes over time here. Wanted to sort of bring it back to you and your role at Talkdesk here. Just one last question, just around, mm-hmm. and, you know, share what you're comfortable with, where we can, you know, edit things out afterwards, but wanted to talk about, you know, you and the role at Talkdesk. What's your quota this year? You know, what are you going to do to get there? What's your sort of your sales plan for this year, for 2017?
Yeah, you know, we have some very lofty goals. You know, I guess without getting into the multiplier that we use or what the other teams are going to bring in, I don't think there's any harm in sharing. You know, my number is 100 million in pipeline, which is pretty aggressive considering it's a new market space for us, and we're going upstream into the bigger deals that are going to take more of our attention and take longer to close. And you know, I approach it the same way that I approach things as an SDR, and the same way that I ask them to approach it is, okay, how many meetings do we need to get there? And I base that on the number of, you know, the average deal size that we have. And then, you know, based on our conversion rate. So, you know, with 100 million, you know, let's say that we have 150K ACV, you know, I'm going to need, what is that, 1,400 meetings to get there. And, you know, if I know that 50% of those are going to convert into ops, you know, then we're going to need about 700 opportunities. And we've got 12 team members that we're scaling to. And, you know, do the math there. You're looking at about 60 ops per rep, five ops per month per rep. And now I know that I got to figure out how to get each person to five opportunities each month, right? So that's kind of where I start. And then, you know, from there, you know, going through and setting up metric goals for the team. And then, you know, again, I think that's a dynamic approach as well, where, you know, some reps need to make 80 calls per day to hit their numbers, and some reps are more sharpshooters and they only need to make 35 calls, and you know, manage accordingly to each team member as you're going through, with the idea of, you know, setting a baseline for them and a guideline, and then they'll settle into their own groove, so to speak, depending on their different skill sets.
That's so cool. I love how you take, you've taken it from a huge number of 100 million in pipeline to each as an SDR, I just need to generate five ops a month. Like it's so easy. It goes from like this massive thing that there's no way we're going to hit that to, oh, that's a very achievable number that I can work towards this month.
Yeah, you can wrap your head around it. And, you know, obviously there's going to be some sweetheart deals that come in for a million seats or whatever, you know, the dream of an SDR. And, you know, that will help for, you know, maybe some of these earlier days where, you know, we're kind of trying to figure out what works, and, you know, or, you know, I still have to hire a few folks, but, you know, I think the only thing you can do is break it down into those simple terms and then manage to that and make adjustments. And, you know, at the end of the year, if you're, you know, staying honest with yourself and looking at what you can do to make the team better, then you end up pretty close to where you need to be. It's not better. So
awesome. So on the other end of those meetings, you know, let's talk about who you're targeting. What types of companies are you going after here?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty, for a SaaS company, you know, I don't think anything is going to shock you. You know, we're going after high tech, high growth companies, you know, e-commerce, retail. These are all industries that we want to be talking to. You know, companies that are customer centric, certainly with Talkdesk and being in the, you know, a contact center solution. You know, companies that are investing in speaking with their customers, and engaging with their customers. Those are all people we want to talk to. Companies with customer satisfaction issues, companies that are trying to kind of take a different approach. You know, the call center is oftentimes looked at as a cost center. And so, you know, turning it into a revenue generator and helping with customer retention and how to grow your accounts through better communication with your customers, all things that, you know, our ears perk up when we hear these kind of initiatives coming through. And those are the kinds of things that we're going after.
Awesome. I'd love to sort of dive a little bit deep here. How do you turn something like a call center from a cost center into a rev gen, something that's generating revenue?
Yeah, you know, so with today, customers are wanting to speak to the companies that they buy from in all sorts of different ways, right? So, for example, you know, if I'm ordering from DoorDash and, you know, my food's late and the driver looks like he's driving in circles, it doesn't really do me much good to shoot him an email to the DoorDash customer service So, you know, I need to be able to get in touch with that driver very quickly. And so the omni-channel allows us to talk to that driver through text. And, you know, I think everybody had experienced this as well with, you know, companies like Lyft, where the driver will text you, you know, that they're circling the block. And, you know, I think that experience allows your customers to have a better experience and will allow them to come back to you, as opposed to losing that customer because their food never showed up. And, you know, all you had to do was just kind of refund them and they just are turned off to the entire experience. And so, you know, customer retention, I think it's a pretty well-known concept that acquiring a customer is much harder than keeping one from a cost perspective, certainly. And so, you know, just those benefits alone will, you know, create an ROI for that investment in an omni-channel support system. And then, you know, just small things of, as a rep, you know, understanding what that customer has done and having a full view of their, the customer life cycle in terms of what they bought and even understanding why they're calling before they call can allow you to route things more appropriately and can allow you to better serve the customer. Can also help you, you know, even suggest other products that maybe the customer could use that other customers use and they wouldn't have that without kind of some of the systems that we have in place that allow you to see these things before, you know, before you answer the phone. You know, I think we've all been on the archaic routing systems where you call in, you give your information, you press six or seven numbers and six or seven different menus only to reach an agent who asks you the same information again. And, you know, I don't really like that experience and it doesn't make me want to buy more when I go through that. So that's the idea.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm the guy that always just ends up mashing zero a million times.
Representative. Finally says we're routing you to a representative. So
yeah, or the ones that are just like the really, really old school and they just hang up on you. They're like, does not compute.
No, that's okay.
I'm calling
like, you. I put the number that you told me to. Exactly.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. I'm going to do the typical hand, like salesperson hand on the doorknob trick. I feel like we're just about done the interview, but I'm going to ask one last question because I saw it on the page here and I know everybody would be mad at me if I didn't ask this. So last question, sure. What's really working for you?
So, you know, I think the idea of one thing working, I think what's working for me is understanding that there's no such thing as a silver bullet. And, you know, kind of pushing that down to the team, keeping it creative, and what's working for one person is probably not going to work for the next. And so using as many channels as possible, phone, email, events, social, even direct mailings is what we're seeing a lot of success with by hitting people in all sorts of different ways and trying to, you know, make the messaging as specific as possible so that we, you know, set ourselves apart from the rest. And then, you know, tracking the metrics and making adjustments, you know, it's all back to kind of setting up that foundation to be able to get a view of what your reps are doing on a day-to-day basis and then making adjustments based on the info you have and not in the sense of, hey, you're not making enough calls, but hey, let me help you be better. And, you know, it seems to be working really well.
Cool, man. And the sort of breakdown, you'd written it up here. Are you comfortable sharing that? Where your deals are coming from?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be very different probably in the next couple months. But, you know, I think I just pulled an off report for the last 100 deals and 20% has come from calling. 20% has come from email responses. 15% has come from, you know, things like in-mail and social selling. 30% has come from events. I think that will probably grow as we do more and more events. And then, you know, we're getting about 15% inbound in the enterprise space right now. So, you know, it just kind of goes to prove that, you know, different opportunities are coming from different places and, you know, if you're not managing to that, then it's going to be, you know, you're going to find yourself pigeonholed and wondering why you're not getting more success. And it's probably because you're leaving out one of those channels.
Awesome. I love how easy it was for you to pull all this information. I've been in organizations where you ask a simple question and it takes, you know, 4 or 5 reports to get a stitch together. I think this is the proof in the pudding for how awesome and how easy your system makes your life.
It does. Yeah. I mean, we have different headaches, but, you know, having this, you know, information and data be one of those headaches is, you know, kind of silly at this point with all the money that we spend on all these different systems that we use.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we've got many more mistakes to make, but let's make new and different, more interesting ones in the future.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thanks, Kent. I think that's a great place to end it. For those that are listening that are just so impressed and by the Salesforce knowledge that you possess, want to get in touch, how can people reach you?
So you can reach me at Kent, K-E-N-T dot the Nook. That's V like Victor, E-N like November, O-O-K at talkdesk.com. I think /K the Nook is my LinkedIn. And, you know, I'm always happy to nerd out on sales dev stuff. So reach out anytime. Happy to help.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kent. This is awesome.
Thanks, Colin.